Back to the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, let's get things going. Happy Thursday. And for the first time in 2025, welcome to this hour of Flames Talk with Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg from the Hot Stove Lounge here at the Scotiabank Saddledome. And you know what? Same is true in 2025 as was true in 2024. You can get Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, you're learning. New Year's resolutions kicked in.
You know,
let's go.
It threw me off for a while when you added Seeker in to the list. It took me a while to get it down again, but I think I got it.
Nailed it. Well, because Google doesn't do podcasts anymore.
Oh, is that what?
And Seeker is a brand new Rogers thing that we're really launching and pushing. So, like, just perfect, perfect way to swap things out. How are you doing? Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you too, buddy.
Welcome back to Flames Talk. I'm excited to get into a lot of what we've got to get into this hour, including some goaltending conversation. We'll do that on the Daily Flames Roundtable. Let me tell you. If you're Ryan Huska or Craig Conroy, don't ever start Dan Vladar again. If I trusted only social media, then Ryan Huska and Craig Conroy should never give Dan Vladar another start. We will talk about that a little bit later on this hour.
I got to tell you, and I know we'll get into it later, but when you mentioned to me by text that, yeah, there's been, there's a lot of people grousing on social media about this, my first reaction was, I think we should have this rotation down enough that it shouldn't have been a surprise that Dan Vladar was starting today. But that's just me. We'll talk about it later.
We will indeed. As the Flames open up a new calendar year, 2025 begins Thursday night against Utah. A big game in the standings because there are not a ton of points separating these two teams. Some of the playoff models love Utah and really think that there's a good chance they could find their way in the playoffs when it's all said and done. So this feels like another, whereas New Year's Eve, they were chasing Vancouver. This is one where they're ahead of Utah. But for Utah, they're looking at this as an opportunity to reel in one of the teams they're chasing to get into the playoffs. So as the Flames enter 2025 and as they get their 2025 portion of the schedule underway, how are we feeling about this team's outlook heading towards the midway mark and as a new calendar year begins? Text line, carte blanche to chime in on this one at 960-960 throughout the afternoon and throughout this segment before we hit the roundtable. What's your feeling on the outlook towards the midway mark of the year? And how are you feeling? And maybe I'll throw it to you first, Wes. Like, do you have a feel or a word or a theme or anything that you would use to classify your outlook on this Flames team as we get January underway?
Well, and if we're just sort of looking not at 2024 as a whole, but at the first 3 months, let's call it, of the 24-25 season, I think the word for me or the theme, and I'll bounce this one back to you in a minute, but I think the word for me is still overachieving. And I know what Nazem Kadri said and was getting at postgame, and I thought it was a hilarious clip when he's essentially asking the media on New Year's Eve, when asked about the Flames being in a playoff spot, oh, who had that? Who projected that? And while you and I think we're among those pushing back on the idea that the Calgary Flames would be in that first overall conversation, I do think this is a team that is overachieving. I did not personally have them in a playoff spot on New Year's Day. I was not anticipating that. And so what I'm maybe fascinated by is where it goes from here. Like, I think if overachieving is the word or theme of the first half-ish of the season for me, then I think the second half is really going to be illuminating. And what I mean by that is I think the Calgary Flames are going to learn a lot about what they have. And I don't mean that in the sense of Craig Conroy in April is going to sit in his office and say, we're ready to contend, because that's not happening. But when I say that it's going to be illuminating or enlightening, like, I'm really interested to see how Matt Coronato, who has never played this much hockey before, is going to hold up down the stretch. I'm really curious to see how a rookie goaltender in Dustin Wolf, a guy who, yes, he had some experience coming into this season at the NHL level, but he's still classed as a rookie. He's never had the rigors of a full NHL season. I'm really fascinated to see how that holds up. I want to see if Connor Zary, as this team models its future, is being slotted as a potential second-line center, or if they look and say, geez, he's not winning enough draws. We think he drives it better from the wing. Let's look to move him back. I want to see if Jacob Pelche continues to show that he can be a full-time guy, which he's shown me in the last few weeks. And every guy I just talked about is 23 or under. And there's going to be people, and I'm sorry, I promised to let you speak a couple minutes ago, and I still haven't. There's going to be people screaming right now. There's people whose entire day is ruined when the Flames win a hockey game because they want this team to get the highest pick possible. And I'm not even here to tell you that you're wrong about that, just that you should settle into the fact that this team is going to be in the mix. We've seen it. And I think even if you'd rather this team tank, what you can take some consolation out of is the fact that the guys who are preventing them from doing it are, for the most part, young guys. And I do think it's going to be really illuminating to see what this organization gets out of them over the next few months.
Yeah, like, they're still getting lots from Nazem Kadri. They're still getting lots from Jonathan Huberdeau, who's obviously having a great year and his best year as a member of the Flames. Like, they're getting contributions from their veterans.
And their top two defensemen, just
for
to,
sure,
to dovetail
Anderson,
that, are 28 and 30, respectively.
But a good portion of what's driven this team so far has been Dustin Wolf between the pipes, even though he's not starting on Thursday night. Kevin Ball stepping in at the age of 24 in just his second full NHL season and really staking claim as the number one left side defenseman on this team. At forward, Zary, Coronato is really, really growing into it. And Pospisil has returned a whole lot closer over the last month or so to what he was last year. So
absolutely,
all of those things are again, as you mentioned, guys who are 24 and under. And so I agree with you that that is something that I'm really curious to see how it plays itself out. I guess what I would say, if I were to say what's my outlook going into 2025 when it comes to this team, is I remain cautiously optimistic, because I think you and I were both in the same kind of chorus of this team isn't going to be a bottom feeder. They're not bad enough to fight with San Jose and Chicago and some of the other really poor teams that are going to be fighting for first overall. I've been saying that since July. And I'm not trying to sit here and pat myself on the back, because God knows I'm wrong as often or more often than I'm right. So that's not what I'm trying to suggest, but it just, at no point did this ever feel like a group that was going to be near the bottom of the standings. This always felt like a group that was going to be right there in the mix, at least for a good three quarters of this season. I don't know what happens after the trade deadline, because I don't know what this trade deadline is going to look like. But this is a group that still has good veteran talent that wants to prove people wrong, and they have been pretty true to their word when saying we want to get younger, and over the last season and a half they have done just that. They've gotten younger. So this always felt like a team to me that was going to be in the mix with the Seattles and the St. Louis's and maybe Utah, who they're in there with right now, and you know, maybe teams like Dallas and Vancouver are a little bit closer to falling out of the Western Conference playoff race than we expected. But the Flames always felt like a team to me that was going to be fighting right there in the wild card mix for a good chunk of this season. And yet, saying all that, they still have surprised a little bit in terms of how competitive they've been able to be against some really good teams. And that start that they got off to really has allowed them to have, you know, I think since the end of November, they have not won more than two in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that when their four-game win streak on November 23rd ended, they've not won. They have not strung anything more than two wins together, and I think that's only happened once. It's been a lot of lose a few, win one, lose one, that type of thing. And yet here they are. They're still fighting smack dab in the middle of the playoff race. So I guess I would say my outlook would remain cautiously optimistic about this group going into 2025. And cautiously optimistic about their chances to make the playoffs. And also cautiously optimistic about them remaining competitive but also not deviating from the big picture, which I think is still the biggest priority. Don't deviate. Keep with the plan. Make sure that youth remains the priority. And make sure that you don't get, I don't want to say fooled, but You don't get sucked in too much by what's happening this year and making, you know, they need a right-handed center, or they need help on the face-offs, or they need some more scoring up front, or, you know, don't get sucked in by that type of stuff. Don't be making moves for this season only. Keep with the process and the long-term plan here. And if they can do that while staying competitive, then I think if you're the Flames, you're okay with that.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, and maybe I'll be proven wrong on this, but I don't think there's any chance that this organization veers off course because of this season. Like, if you're a Flames fan, you've got the right show, Flames Talk, and if you're listening thinking, oh, they're going to overachieve and they're just going to start making moves for now, I just really don't have any sense that this management group is going to go down that road. You know, one of the legacies of Chris Snow in this building is he was a guy and had the numbers to back it up. He was a guy that really, from what I've heard over the years, pushed back against this team making some right now trades after the 2014-15 season. And I know that message is something that has been talked about since, that you can't let...
Because they did deviate from their plan.
Absolutely,
after that year. And we know that for a fact.
Firing out first-round picks, and I think it's actually... I think it's very helpful. I think it should be a little bit encouraging is not the right word. I think it should be a little bit reassuring for Flames fans that Craig Conroy was part of that front office, because he was here to see firsthand. Those aren't his moves. They were Brad Treliving's moves, and Brad set the direction, but he was here to kind of firsthand see that it was too soon and see maybe the years of not the sort of growth that this organization thought that they'd be capable of. And so I'm not super worried about Craig Conroy specifically veering off course, but yeah, I do expect this team to kind of hang around it. And you used the term cautiously optimistic. Maybe I haven't been optimistic enough. Like I'll share on the air a conversation you and I had after they got blown out by Pittsburgh. It was the last game of November. We can look back now and say that the most significant thing to come out of that 6-2 loss was Ryan Huska decided in the third period he'd like to see how a Huberto, Kadri, Pospisil line would look, and certainly that's been a huge part of what I think is a 6-3-3 December so far.
6-3-3,
do I have that right?
Yep.
But I said to you after that road trip, a awful road trip that ended in Pittsburgh, I said, buddy, I don't know that this team can play the way that Ryan Huska wants them to play for 82 games. There's guys who, to me at that point, and this was my conversation to you, I said there's guys that I don't know if they're young enough to play that way, and yet they continue to prove me wrong. Some of the guys that I thought looked tired, looked worn out in that Pittsburgh game, you know, I'll use a guy like Blake Coleman as an example, have been some of the guys really driving the bus for this team. And so maybe I haven't been optimistic enough. And I got to tell you, I'm as intrigued by where this is going as I think I've ever been at this point in a Flame season, because I honestly don't know.
Yeah, because it does... Because, and maybe this will help us translate
Transition.
There we go.
Yeah, we can get through this one together, buddy.
Oh. Well, one of us can. That'll be a big win. What are some things that either need to change? Like, what are some trends that are going to need to improve? And what are some of the things that you can almost label as sustainable and say, this is what they are? Because I look at it and I say, I think they've scored more than three goals like five times this year, six times this year. They're about to play their 38th game, and I think five times this year they've scored more than three goals.
I think it might even be four.
It's not double digits. I know that much. They have not been a team that easily builds on leads. And the last two wins are perfect examples. In San Jose, home to Vancouver, I thought they were the better team for the majority of both those games, and yet the largest lead they had was two goals, and I think they enjoyed a two-goal lead in those two games combined for 63 seconds because Jonathan Huberdeau scored a couple of empty netters in those games, right? And so, I don't know. I look at it and I say, for how long can they continue to walk on this razor's edge and still keep on coming out on the right side of it or getting a point out of it? You pointed out when we were talking last week, I think it was, their record in one-goal games, where they've played now 15 one-goal games, and they have failed to register a point in all but one of those one-goal games. They're 7-1-7 when games are decided by one goal. How much longer does that margin always tilt the way of them getting a point? And part of that is, If you don't start building on some of these leads, you know, all of a sudden, one-goal games, all it takes is two quick ones, and they go the other way. I guess, is the lack of offense something that catches up to them? That's one of the big questions I have for the back part of this season.
Yeah, and you know, when you ask the question, well, what would need to change? If the lack of offense doesn't change, the penalty killing needs to.
Right.
Like, this is a team that is not, with their current offensive output, I was going to say arsenal, but I'll say output. Like, if you're the 29th ranked penalty kill in the NHL at 71.8%, you need to be a group that can outscore its mistakes, and the Flames aren't. And with their current personnel, and I've been loving that top line lately of Kadri, Huberdeau, and Pospisil. I think, you know, credit where it's due. Jonathan Huberdeau in the month of December had his most productive month as a Calgary Flame. Finishes with 15 points in 12 games. He's been a really important driver. So credit there. And yet what I'll say is that it's easier or going to be easier to fix the penalty kill than it's going to be to fix the scoring woes. Yep. And that doesn't mean that it's easy to fix a penalty kill that has sort of sputtered off and on at different stretches throughout the season, but it's certainly easier than suddenly becoming a team that averages 3.4 per night. That's not what we're going to be talking about here.
Let's read a few texts at 960-960. And respond to that, because it took a little bit, but now people are starting to dive in on the text line. Danny in YYC says, the Flames compete, and that is all I was hoping for. The playoff talk is a huge bonus. Kadri knew the team better than anyone, and certainly there is, I don't think there's any doubt that you've got a lot of players that, as much as I believe them, that they don't care what Pat or Wes or Vickers or anybody else says on the outside, I don't think they care. Like, I don't think they're saying, oh, Wes isn't as optimistic as he should be. I'm gonna lose some sleep over that. Like, I don't think so.
I can tell you, I go in that room every day, and I don't get a lot of feedback about the things we talk about.
Me
on
neither.
The radio.
I think they're pretty unbothered by it.
Yes.
But I think generally, as they should be, generally, I think that they knew that the hockey world, not because I think that in this market, people have been a little more optimistic about them than the hockey world at large has been. But I think there was just a belief inside that room that we're being overlooked. And I think that was a fair belief. And I think that is something, whether they care what we say or not, I do think that that has been a big motivating factor all year long.
Absolutely.
Like, hey, let's stick it in the hockey world's pipe and they can smoke it and let's just keep on doing what we're doing. And I think that that has really been a powerful driver for them.
I'll share a conversation I had earlier today with Ryan Lomberg, and I wrote just sort of a fun story about Ryan Lomberg and the national anthems and all that. You can find it on the Post Media site. But Ryan Lomberg, as some people might have seen photos on social media, Ryan Lomberg went to the final of the Circle K Classic tournament yesterday. And kudos, as a side note, to Calgary International Hockey Academy for their run to the final, and for giving Shattuck.
Shout out to Hunter Kelso.
Yeah, giving Shattuck St. Mary's a run for their money in what was a 1-0 championship game. Anyway, so I'm talking to Ryan Lomberg about being at the Circle K final yesterday, and one of the things I said to him is, I love this question. Regardless of what sort of athlete I'm talking to, I love to hear what people say to them. Like, what do you hear from fans? When you go out and you can tell from the long hair and the big smile and the scratches under his eye from one of his recent fights, you can pick Ryan Lomberg out of a crowd. And so what do people come up to you at Max Bell Arena and want to talk about? And he said, you know, I think Calgarians understand how hardworking this team has to be. I think Calgarians are really proud of how hard this team works, and they're proud of what we've done so far, and they just want us to keep it going. And I walked away from that thinking that's a really interesting way to put it. Like, whether this run ends in a playoff spot, whether it ends in a 10th place finish in the Western Conference, how can you not, as a city, look at and proud or just really be, look at this group and say, good for you guys. Like, good for you for trying to show everybody that they were wrong. Good for you for just sort of shrugging off all the talk about how bad the Calgary Flames would be. Good for you for not being too worried about the fact that some of your own fans, and this isn't a shot at the fan base, this is how it works in, you know, markets that need to bring in some star players. Some of your own fans would love it if you went 0-82. And yet, all the current players can do is be sort of unbothered by that. Mm-hmm. And I give them a ton of credit for the way they have, because for this group to be where they are now, for this group to have continued success, they absolutely have to work their tails off. I referenced that Pittsburgh game, right? They didn't want to work in that game. And another very, you know, a roster that beyond the top end skill wouldn't necessarily scare anybody. Like, we talk a lot about the Pittsburgh Penguins not having a ton of depth. Well, they made the Calgary Flames look really bad that night because the Calgary Flames just didn't want to put right. the work in. And so I give this group a lot of credit, man. I really do.
Jeff in Lethbridge, or Jeff Bridge, says, well, the Flames are only 4 points back of Edmonton for third in the Pacific. They're also only 5 points up on 22nd in the league. The long-term plan must not change, especially if a tough second half drops them closer to that top 10 pick. And I really don't think that the long-term plan is going to change. In fact, I've been repeatedly assured by the people that I quite trust that that's not going to happen, that they're not going to deviate and start to chase this season. This from Jerry in BC. Admittedly, in the team tank school of thought, I have since the beginning of the season converted to more of an enjoy the ride type person. Now, if they can find a generational center so the wins can actually mean something, that would be fantastic. And I that's kind of where I've been, like, just enjoy the ride, because I can tell you this much, there is nothing that Wes Gilbertson nor me nor you can do about it. There's literally nothing that we do or say is going to change Ryan Lomberg or Nazem Kadri or Michael Backlund or Mackenzie Weegar et al.'s thought process. At no point are any one of those guys going to go out and say, you know what, it's probably better if we don't win for the long term.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Let's just dog it for the rest of the year. Like, it's just not going to happen. These guys are going to continue to try to prove everybody on the outside wrong, or everybody that is doubting them wrong, and see where the chips may fall. And so in knowing that, that's kind of the thing that I've preached is kind of just enjoy the ride, like enjoy the wins. And if you're looking for enjoy the wins, and if you're looking for a higher pick, embrace the losses. That's kind of the theme that a few of the texters have thrown out there, and I like it. Enjoy the wins, and if you are on Team Tank, then I guess embrace the losses too.
Yeah, if you're on Team Tank, what you can take solace in, I suppose, is that this team isn't, you know, Craig Conroy is not out there trading prospects and picks to try to fix the penalty kill now. He's not out there trading prospects and picks for a 32-year-old right winger who might be able to bolster the middle six. Whatever that might look like, right? They're not chasing an Andre Kuzmenko solution by trying to find a guy he's had chemistry with in the past. Whatever it might look like to you to make a decision that's just sort of invested almost solely in what happens over the next 4 months, this Flames team's not doing that. You know, are the Kadris and Uyghurs and Andersons and Huberdeaux and Colemans and Lombergs and Zeris and what are all those guys making it tough on this team to get a high pick? Yeah, and you have to give them credit for it.
Go rapid fire on a few of these. This says, question for you guys. If you were to make a move, what would you be looking for from the Flames perspective and player type, a 23-year-old right shot center? I know a guy, Dylan Cousins. But like that, and I don't believe that Dylan Cousins is imminently going to get traded, and I don't know if the Flames would be the team to bring him in. I believe that they would like to if that was an option, but I don't know if Buffalo is going to, A, make a trade attainable for another team, or B, trade him. But, like, if they're going to make a move, that's what they need, a young right-shot center. But, like, who doesn't? But if you're looking for what they need the most, a young right-shot center.
Yeah, and I guess the hard thing about rebuilding your team up the middle is there's a lot of patience required, right? How do you get generational centers? Well, you don't often get them in trades, although, you know, if you're looking to get a star in a trade, Buffalo is usually a pretty good spot to start. But
what are you talking about?
Dylan Cousins has not been a can't-miss surefire producer outside of one season in his NHL career either. I think... And I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the texter, but to answer the question, I wouldn't be, if I was Craig Conroy, I would not be actively looking to add anything right now. I'm just going to sit back. And so the question was, you know, what are you trying to add or what are you targeting? Yeah, always. That young center is going to be at the top of the wish list for a few years, because when you get one, you're going to want another one anyways. Like you need a few of them, and yet I think the answer for me is I'm not going out seeking almost anything right now.
This reads, I think most Calgary fans are proud of what this team has done. The thing is, having an underdog year like this will only prolong the rebuild, especially after giving Montreal the 14th overall pick and having a couple of late first-rounders in your first real rebuilding season. Dylan and Revy says...
Can I just touch on that one really quick? Unfortunately, and it's not tied to this current management, there's nothing you can do about the Montreal trade right now. And so I don't know what... I don't know that success that comes from Wolf and Zeri and Pelche and Coronado necessarily sets this team back, although anytime you lose a first-round pick, of course, that's a blow.
And you're not losing a first-round pick. You're probably going to sacrifice, like, 15 to 20 spots is probably what
Correct.
It's going to end up looking like.
That's a better
right?
way to put it. Which is, hey,
it's still not ideal.
It's not ideal.
I guarantee you Craig Conroy knows. Like, he understands. Like, they know that's not ideal either, but they also know actively trying to lose hockey games isn't the way to go either. So it's kind of a catch-22.
I think just if I'm pushing back anywhere, it's I sometimes get the sense that there's this thought, if you could just pick at ninth overall, you'd find a generational center there. And without going through every ninth overall pick for X number of years, it's just like the generational guys are going 1, 2, 3.
And believe me, I know the Flames need to find their guys. I get that. And I know it is way harder to find those guys later in the draft. I also understand that. Like, I'm not disputing that, But I'm also just saying, like, at this stage of the game, unless they've actively said they're not going to try to tank. Like, they have publicly said that. So they're not just going to trade Kadri and Uyghur and Anderson for a bunch of nothing, right? A bunch of right now nothing. Like, they're not. That's just not what they're going to do. And you can bang your head against the wall on that for sure, but I just that's not necessarily something that's going to be happening. This is about as close to a rebuild that the Flames have undertaken with actively trying to get younger they've done in 15 years. They maybe tried it for a year before the year they made the playoffs in 14-15 and did deviate, and they learned some lessons from that. So I guess I just keep on saying they've got a plan, and that plan does not include tanking. And we'll see how it plays itself out, and we'll see if they can get their guys and get their and get their generational guys, or not even generational guys, but get their cornerstone guys, because generational gets a little old because there's really one a generation. Yeah. Otherwise, they're not generational.
I mean, they seem to be one a year now, which is a credit to young hockey players, but that's beside the point.
Dylan says it's going to suck to not get that pick, but here's an important part of a rebuild that doesn't get talked about, developing a work ethic for 82+. Zeri, Coronado, and Wolf need experience too. This says... seeing which ones... still make sense. Randy and Randy's texting from Guadalajara.
Ooh,
in Jalisco. Reminds me a little of 03-04. If they keep pulling together and Wolf turns into Kiprusoff, anything's possible. I always say I don't compare anything to 2004 because that was a once-in-a-lifetime run. And I think but could they make the playoffs this year? Sure they could. Nothing will be 0-4 if you ask me. I try not to ever make comparisons to that year because that year was so special. And finally from Spencer in Saskatoon, I'm pretty content to watch the games and not worry about that pick until it actually matters. Like once they hit the trade deadline, then I'll worry. But they have other first-round picks this year. Would it be nice to have another top-10 pick? Sure. But sometimes you're handcuffed by a conditional pick from a previous GM. If Kuzmenko was having a better year, it would have been nice to get a better pick for him. Enjoying the year and having fun watching games with a team that is fully engaged into a team identity. Great stuff on the text line at 960.
That's a great text because I think that very much is the best way to approach it. You know, if you're refreshing the bubble on where they might sit in the lottery every night for the next 4 months, stressing about that Montreal pick, I think you're going to miss out on some entertaining hockey.
It is Pat and Wes underway this hour on Flames Talk with your 2025 outlook on our first show of 2025. We're coming at you from the Scotiabank Saddledome and everything being produced by Cam and Shan back at our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now it's time for our first Daily Flames Roundtable of 2025. It's brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, and now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, and Willsy, Wes and I have made kind of just some joking references about this, but I'll just ask straight up, do you have a strong opinion one way or the other on Dan Vladar getting the start against Utah? Because I can tell you if you don't, that social media or many on social media does. But what was your reaction? I'll tell you what, I came into the Dome expecting number 80 to be in the starter's net, so that was just kind of what I was expecting based on how things have gone this season. But I'm curious kind of what your reaction, how strong your reaction was when we found out that it'll be Vladar getting the start against Utah.
Well, to answer your question, I do not have a strong opinion on who the starting goaltender should be. I expected it to be Dan Vladar as well. And listen, I get it. Dustin Wolf is off to a fantastic start this season. He's off to a fantastic start in his NHL career. His 20 wins and his first 35 career starts are the second most in the history of the franchise. Only the great Mike Vernon had more with 21. And I understand why Flames fans want to see Dustin Wolf every single night, but that's not realistic. And I don't think that's what's best for Dustin Wolf or for the Calgary Flames. He is a 23-year-old in his first full season in the NHL, and he's probably going to play around 50% of the games. And that's a good thing. Yeah, Dan Vladar's had a good season too, not as good as Dustin Wolf, although it's a little bit like comparing apples to oranges, because I do think Vladar's had the tougher of the starts when you look at, you know, what both guys have been given to this point in the season. But, you know, Vladar's coming off what I think was an excellent game. You might argue he was the Flames' best player. I think he was certainly one of them in that 3-0 loss to the Golden Knights on Sunday. So I think he's earned starts, and I think Dustin Wolf has earned starts. And I'm maybe jumping to a conclusion here, but I suspect the plan that is at least written in pencil for the Flames as they head into the final two games of this three-game road trip is to start Dan Vladar tonight and then to start Dustin Wolf on Saturday.
Now, how dare – are we going to be up in arms if Wolf starts on Saturday? Oh, no, probably not. We probably won't be. That'll probably be okay. Right?
Yeah. That'll be fine.
It's actually just another reason that it makes sense to start Dan Vladar tonight is that it sets Dustin Wolf up for Saturday against Nashville, which just happens to be the team that he shut out on November 15th. And one of the things that teams do as they're determining their starting goaltender is go through and figure out, okay, well, what's his recent history? What's his history,
you know,
period
what? Let me just jump in on you, because I only do this because I just cut this clip for pregame Thursday night. Cam, I just put this into raw audio. This was at practice on whatever day they came back, a Monday. This would have been Monday's practice after the road trip. And Ryan Huska was asked about making his goaltending decisions, and this is exactly what he said Monday.
A little bit would be opponent, but a lot of it would be making sure we have a fresh guy. So, I mean, sometimes you're going to have a goaltender that's played very well against a certain team and his record is ridiculously good. Then pretty good chance we'll try to build a rotation around that at times. So Jason does all that legwork. He looks into all their records and who's had success against what teams. But the biggest thing for us is to make sure that whoever plays that night is fresh and they're, you know, at the gas tank is right full, so they'll give us the best chance that we have to have success.
So I just wanted to play that because the two things that are important are record against opponent, mm-hmm. which you're talking about, and keeping both guys fresh.
And if I could add a third thing that is important, and it certainly dovetails with keeping both guys fresh, one of the strengths, like we probably should have talked about this in the last segment when we were talking about things that need to continue for the Calgary Flames to stick in the playoff race. Well, one of the things that they need to sustain or need to carry forward from the first half of their season is strong goaltending. It's one of the reasons that we're talking about a team that's off to a better start than many were giving them credit for. And so I think you have to look and say, well, maybe part of the reason, call me crazy here, guys, but maybe part of the reason that goaltending's been a strength is how they've deployed them. Maybe this platoon, and I think going into Dustin Wolf's last start, I think the total minutes were separated by like 3 or 4 minutes. Like this is as close to a 50-50 split as you're ever going to get in the NHL. It's working. And if it's working, and this is why I was shocked to hear Pat say that so many people were grousing on social media about it being a Vladar start. It just seemed like such a no-brainer to me. It felt like one of those tweets that should have zero reactions, because who didn't think Dan Vladar was starting tonight?
I get that Dustin Wolf has this incredible home record, and he's 10-1-1 on home ice, and he's got the tied for the best home ice save percentage in the NHL at .937. I understand all of that. I understand you take a look at the splits. One guy's .914, one guy's .890. I get all of that. I really do. And yet, I still, and this is the thing that I've been saying all along and will continue to say, is that I think part of the reason Dustin Wolf has had the success at home or overall is because he's part of a tandem, because they are not overworking him. They're not overusing him. They are not putting him in a situation where he goes night after night after night because they're comfortable that Dan Vladar gives them an opportunity. And, Wilsey, to your point, the Flames lost on Sunday in Vegas, and that goes down as an L on Dan Vladar's record, and yet Vladar did everything and more to keep them in that hockey game to the point that they were only down by a goal until, what, 50 minutes in. And they're not only down by a goal if it wasn't for Vladar, and he can't he did his job as best as he possibly could, and then some. They just didn't score that night. And so, you know, there's I know Francis wrote about it. I know you've talked about it. I know it's been on the Sportsnet telecast, like the record and the difficult spots that Vladar has played in compared to Wolf. I'm not trying to suggest in any way, shape, or form that Wolf isn't full marks for the success he's had or that he shouldn't be talked about as a Calder Trophy finalist or any of that type of stuff. I'm just saying that I think part of his success is the fact that he's part of a tandem. Part of his success is that they do have another guy they're comfortable going with and that they're going out of their way to keep Dustin fresh and his energy levels high and all that type of stuff. You don't need, you know, Kevin Woodley has said many times the days of goalies starting 55 to 65 games a year, that's going to continue to get more and more rare as we move along. And so why not just make sure that your 23-year-old goaltender who's in his first NHL season full-time isn't getting overworked? Why not go out of your way to put him in a spot to succeed? And I think it's working so far, so why would you change that formula? That's kind of my rebuttal to they should be going with Dustin Wolf. And this has not been a win-and-you're-in scenario at any point this year. In fact, Ryan Huska's gone out of his way to say it's not win-and-you're-in, and it's not going to be win-and-you're-in. The shutout is the only thing that's changed that this year. So, yeah, I wasn't surprised by it. I think it's the right call, and when it's all said and done, Wolf's going to get two of the three starts on home ice, which with his home ice record is probably the way it should be, too. I digress. Back to you, Wilsey.
Yeah, I think it's the right call as well, and I also think the Flames have really gone out of their way to bring Dustin Wolf along slowly. And I think that might be part of the problem for some fans is that for two or three years, Dustin Wolf was the best goaltender in the American Hockey League. And a lot of Flames fans were shouting from the mountaintops, you know, we got to open up a spot for this guy. Trade Jacob Markstrom, trade Dan Vladar, send them home. Just open up a spot for Dustin Wolf. And now, okay, he's final in the NHL. He's finally a full-time player with the Flames. He's off to a phenomenal start in his rookie season, and now everybody wants to see him every night. They've been chomping at the bit to see this guy, the first great, potentially at least, homegrown goaltender for this team in a long, long time, maybe even going back to Mike Vernon. So they want to see him as often as possible. But I think the Flames have done the smart thing, both in how they've developed Dustin Wolf and how they've used him this season. You don't want to throw Wolf to the wolves, so to speak. So try to put him in a position to succeed, to continue to build his game, to continue to build his confidence. And the future is now, but the future is also a year from now, 5 years from now, hopefully 10 years from now for Dustin Wolf being the number one goaltender for this team. So what they've done so far has worked. We are 37 games into the season, and the Flames are sitting in a Stanley Cup playoff spot in large part because of their goaltending. The biggest question mark has become one of the biggest strengths. So I have a hard time questioning whether it be Craig Conroy or Ryan Huska or Jason LaBarbera or whoever with how they've used the goaltenders this season. Both guys have been really good. And both guys, with the exception of, you know, probably two or three nights, have done their job and given this team a chance to win.
And because we were talking about Dustin Wolf, what Wes hasn't been a part of this. I don't think Wilsey has been either. My new little toy here.
I like it.
My aunt,
and here's the other thing, guys.
My aunt gave me this thing that makes animal noises because she knows that Dustin Wolf plays on the Flames. So I like
that. That's an actual toy. I heard you say that on the post-game show the other night, and I thought you were just doing that tongue-in-cheek, and like somebody back at the studio was just playing that sound.
No, it's kind of like a megaphone.
What if you don't mind us taking off or going off track here? What other animals you got?
What's that one? We got a panther.
Okay.
How about an eagle? We got an eagle here. Kind of sounds like a seagull, but that's an eagle.
Yeah.
We got a loon.
Oh, that's a nice one.
Out on the lake, and then we got a bear.
Can I hear the panther one more time? Because I'm not sold on that one.
Could be any type of.
It's not like somebody stepped on a cat. I don't know.
Wilsey, if you're ever
walking,
if you're ever walking through the woods at Prentice Green and then you hear that, that's a panther. So now you know.
No, watch out. It's
yeah.
Not a bobcat.
Well,
panther.
Trust me. Sometimes they have a sign on the first tee that says wildlife on the course. And sometimes it's a bear, usually a black bear. But when I see a sign saying there's a cougar on the course, I'm not going to lie. I'm looking over my shoulder the whole round. one more quick note on the goaltenders.
Yeah.
Did you know Dan Vladar has never lost a game to the Utah Hockey Club?
That is true. How many
so
games
you talked
play?
About? You talked about keeping them fresh. You talked about looking at how a goaltender's performed against a certain opponent. Well, Dustin Wolf was in net. I'm not faulting him for what happened in the first ever game between these two teams back on October 30th, because for me, it was one of the two or three worst games the Flames have played all year, but he did give up five in Salt Lake City that night. So why not to give Vladar a crack in the first game at Scotiabank Saddledome between the two teams tonight?
A little bit quicker on our second topic, because we have talked about this guy a lot, but just, and I guess we're not talking about one guy in particular. It's Wilsey, Wes, and Pat, but Braden Pahal plays his 100th NHL game. Nice little mark for him after he signed a contract extension a few weeks ago. But guys, Pahal with Bean, that's been pretty steady now for a number of weeks. And obviously, Ball Anderson has been steady all year. And for the most part, over the last couple of weeks, aside from one game in Vegas, Hanley Weegar has turned into something pretty steady for this group. Guys, is the six they're going with against Utah, is this the best top six they've had all year? Or is this the most comfortable top six they've had all year?
Maybe the most comfortable. I don't like this question, Pat, because I feel like you're putting me in a position where I have to say something not necessarily negative, but also not necessarily positive about a guy who I really like and a player who I like in Joel Hanley. He's 33 and he knows who he is and he doesn't try to do too much. And I really appreciate that about him.
Yeah.
But I still think that long-term Daniil Miramanov has a higher ceiling. And there are some other young defensemen in the system, you know, maybe guys we don't see this season, but might see next season, who I would like to get a look at, whether it be in the top six or in the top four. And as far as the pairings are concerned, like, I get why the coaches are rolling out the three pairings that they are right now, because they're working. I think Jake Bean is definitely playing his best hockey of the season, and he looks really comfortable playing on the left side of a pairing with Braden DePaul. Of course, you've got to Kevin Ball and Rasmus Anderson. I'm not sure they're playing at quite the level that they were earlier this season, but that's been a really good number one pairing for the Flames this season. And then you've got Joel Hanley and Mackenzie Weegar. And I think one of the reasons why they put those two guys together, maybe the biggest reason, is to move Weegar back to his strong side, the right side. But in a perfect world, I'd like to see Daniil Miramanov get back in and stay in. And that won't happen unless he plays at a high enough level and plays consistently. But I do think there's a lot there. So for me, and maybe you try a different bottom four with the way Jake Bean is playing, I wouldn't mind seeing him bumped up into the top four and onto a pairing with Mackenzie Weegar. But you know, with the way things are working right now, I understand why the coaches haven't tried that and why they're rolling out the three pairings that they have for the most part of late.
Yeah, the most interesting thing to me, guys, and Wilsey hit on it, and I asked Ryan Huska about it this morning, actually, is, you know, how big of a factor Mackenzie Weegar's terrific play over the last little while has to do with him being on his natural side. And, you know, we talk so often about his versatility and about his ability to play on the left, and it's one of the reasons that he was shortlisted by Team Canada, why I still think he might ultimately be representing his country at the Four Nations Face-Off. I know their message to him was, hey, you never know, like, we're calling you to tell you were close, but you never know, we might be calling you back. And so when I look at the pairing with Hanley, I think it's maybe a little bit less, and I don't say this as a knock on Joel, it's a little bit less about what he's doing and a little bit more about the opportunity to have Mackenzie Weegar on the right. And I think as you look long term at, okay, Weegar's signed for a bunch more years, what do we need? think what they need to find eventually, and chances are they have lots of candidates in the system already, but what they need is a partner who's going to allow him to play on the right side more often. Because as good as he is on the left, he's better on the right. And the other thing that Ryan Huska mentioned this morning is that Mackenzie Weegar's at his best with a more predictable partner. And at this point, that's what Hanley is, despite knowing there's some limitations there. And unfortunately, it's what Daniil Miromanov is not.
It's I think this is their most comfortable six. I definitely think the coaching staff is most comfortable with this, and they've been closer to being kind of that baseball lineup on the back end now than they have been at any point this year. And yet, I agree, Wilsey, when you talk about the higher ceiling for Miromanov, and I do believe they want to make sure that they don't forget about getting him into the lineup. It's just, and I even go back to when you suggested putting Jake Bean at some point with Mackenzie Weegar, because I think the way Bean is playing, there's a lot to that. The problem that they've run into right now is that with Braden Pahal, it's not even a problem, but with Pahal, who plays his 100th NHL game, solidifying his spot there, I don't know. I'm not sure where Miromanov fits. Let's just say that they move Bean to play with Weegar. Well, then do you want two righties on the third pair? And do you want – is it better to have two righties on the second pair with Weegar moving to the left? I don't know. Like, I don't know the answer as to how to properly or ideally get Miromanov back in as a full-time D-man on this roster. And I give Hanley a ton of credit for being the predictable, steady guy he's been, because he's made it that much more difficult for them. I think that if Hanley doesn't do what he does, then they probably still would be experimenting and maybe trying to force Miromanov Weegar a little bit more. And maybe they do go back to that at some point, because they do have a body of work from last season where they played pretty well together. But it's an interesting spot they're in right now, and it might be one of these conversations we're having all year long.
Yeah, and another reason why I think they're using the three pairings that they are using right now is because you've got a lefty in Ball, a righty in Anderson, a lefty in Hanley, a righty in Weegar, and then you've got a lefty in Bean and a righty in Pahal. And when you look at those three pairings, you've also got a guy who I would describe as more of a defensive defenseman playing with a guy who I would describe as being more of an offensive defenseman. So on the first pairing, Ball's the defensive guy, Anderson's the offensive guy. On the second pairing, Hanley's the defensive guy, Weegar's the offensive guy. And on the third pairing, Bean's the offensive guy, and Pahal would be the defensive guy. And you've got a pairing, or three pairings, where you've got a guy who likes to kind of skate the puck up the ice and can help you with breakouts and get through the neutral zone as well. So I think there are three well-balanced pairings. And again, I hate for this to sound like I'm taking some sort of shot at Joel Hanley, because I'm a huge fan of him and the consistency that he brings and the type of game that he plays. But I think in a perfect world, he's probably not a top four defenseman for you. Doesn't mean he's not in your lineup, probably just not playing in the top four. But it's working right now, so I get it.
No, and I don't think, honestly, that's unfair to say. And yet he's done a really nice job of making it difficult on the coaching staff to go elsewhere. Good stuff, Wilsey. We will see you down here for Puck Drop. Thank you as always, hey?
Okay, guys. See you soon.
He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. We're wrapping up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Shan and Cam, our outstanding producers, and our Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.